Well, good morning, everyone. And again, welcome to you. And we have a big contingency from Seattle. We're very happy that you're here. And also, I know some of you are staying on for our Living Discipleship program after this. So it's a wonderful way to begin it and then just continue on in the depth. And as we mentioned, we have some of our wonderful center leaders from the East Coast, Kelly and Emery and Colleen and
Colleen's on a conference call.
Oh, okay. Okay. Colleen had a conference call. She'll be back. There's symbolism in that, I think. So what we're going to talk about today is something that we could spend many, many days talking about, a lifetime talking about. Master's guidance for accelerating our spiritual growth. Now, Swamiji has said, yes, Master and Swami. Swamiji has said that Master is the avatar for Dwapara Yuga, the age of energy. And as I was preparing, I began thinking more deeply about this. What does that mean? We know Master brought incredible techniques, and we'll talk about them, for energizing, for intensity, for developing willpower. But these are hallmarks of Dwapara Yuga, of the age of energy, where humanity is, their dawning awareness is coming, that this world is not based on form. It began with the great mystical physicists of the beginning part of the 20th century, Einstein and so forth, who began to see that, wait a minute, the material world is not substantial. There's something beyond that. And they defined that what was beyond as the speed of light, as light. But we know by studying Vedanta that beyond light even is simply consciousness. A friend of mine sent me a wonderful little video clip yesterday, which I watched, called Overview. And it's little interviews with astronauts who have been up in space and have had mystical experiences. And the Edgar Mitchell, who had a very, very profound experience. He was on the Apollo 8 expedition. And on the way to the moon, he was in charge of getting there. And so he was very, very focused. But on the way back from the moon, his job was kind of done. And so he just relaxed more and observed and looked at the Earth, the beautiful blue marble from space. And many of the astronauts said, we thought that trip was about going to the moon. On our way back, we realized, I get shivers when I say this, that it wasn't about going to the moon. It was about seeing the Earth from afar and seeing that this beautiful planet that we all live on, on which there are no boundaries. And they said, just seeing like thunderstorms from up above it, it was just like beautiful fireworks and the colors and the shades of blue. But Edgar Mitchell had even a more profound experience. And his experience was he began feeling oneness as looking at the unity of the Earth. And he realized that the Earth was just floating in space. It was just, as Buckminster Fuller said, spaceship Earth. It was just like a spaceship. And we think it's where we live. But and then you could see beyond that, beyond into infinity. And he realized all of it was connected. And as that experience began deepening and deepening, he felt what he only could describe as a kind of happiness or ecstasy that he had never known. And he didn't know, it was something wrong with me? Am I having a stroke? And he wrote to his local university, and he described the experience. What was this? Is there any scientific or medical research that talks about this? And what this, he didn't say which university it was, so I don't know. But the university wrote back and they said, we have researched everything. The only reference to anything like this we can find is in the Rig Vedas of India. And they call it Sabhakalpa Samadhi. And that's what he realized what it was. And anyway, that just, so Mass, Dwapar Yuga is not just about the breaking down of separateness. Dwapara Yuga is about, and this is when we say Master is the avatar for Dwapara Yuga. It isn't just his dynamic energy and his use of willpower. It's about a unified vision of reality that without which the technology of our times will not help us move into a higher age. We'll have more information, we'll be able to get it quicker, but will we become wiser? No, why would we? And so what Master brought, why he is the avatar of Dwapara Yuga, is he brought not only that, but he brought joy and enthusiasm and creativity and love, deep love for humanity, deep love for everyone he met, and devotion for God, and the practical expression of higher consciousness in daily life. And so when you say he's the avatar for Dwapara Yuga, I would go beyond that. He is the consciousness of Dwapara Yuga embodied in a form that is guiding those who have ears to hear to forward. So that, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow in the talk, the subject is personal evolution and global evolution, but what he was trying to share with us, what he was trying to charge us with, was this ability to take that energy, the heightened energy of Dwapara Yuga, and channel it in the highest expression, joy, love, creativity, unity, world brotherhood, cooperative communities, all of these things are the highest expression of Dwapara Yuga. Now I want to start, for those of you who would like, this is something in a wonderful new book of ours, of Crystal Clarities, that's just come out. It's the 7th in the Wisdom of Yogananda series, How to Awaken Your True Potential. And it's just marvelous. These books, everyone is a jewel, but I want us now, for those who would like, to join me in a pledge that Master asked all of his students to make. Not only make, but sign. This was given, mailed to them when they began taking his lessons. And so if you would like, I'm taking this pledge as one of Master's students. You can join me if you like. If not, just listen and consider and... Okay, so I will read each line and then we'll all take the pledge in our hearts.
Hear this, the pledge before we do it?
Well, there is a line. Krishnadas, you will have to give up your car. Okay, I'll read the whole pledge just to make sure everybody's okay with it. And then we'll take it together. Okay, Master asks us to take this pledge. I will concentrate on the teachings and will be loyal to the faithful daily practice of the techniques. I will have a little temple in my room wherever I am, a closet or even a screened-off corner. I will consider myself the minister of my temple to correct myself and teach the audience consisting of my diverse, untrained thoughts and feelings, so that I may be an ideal example and thereby be of real service to my fellow beings. I will help others to the best of my ability every day, materially, mentally, and spiritually. I will endeavor to live by the following moral and spiritual rules. I will not judge others, only myself. I will strictly refuse to hear or read unkind discussions of others. That means we stop reading the news. I will try to be efficient in everything, neither passively depending on God nor egotistically claiming the credit for myself when I have accomplished anything. I will make myself successful through my own efforts and the power of God in me. I will love all temples and churches as my Father's home, and I will be loyal to these teachings. I will try to support, in whatever way I can, my local center. Okay? I'm not taking a show of hands, but whoever wants to. Do you want to repeat it out loud? Okay. So we'll do that. I'll read it in segments, and then you repeat it with me if you like. Why don't we stand? I will concentrate on the teachings.
I will concentrate on the teachings.
And will be loyal to the faithful daily practice of the techniques.
And will be loyal to the faithful daily practice of the techniques.
I will have a little temple in my room.
I will have a little temple in my room.
Wherever I am.
Wherever I am.
A closet or even a screened-off corner.
A closet or even a screened-off corner.
I will consider myself the minister of my temple.
I will consider myself the minister of my temple.
To correct myself.
To correct myself.
And teach the audience.
And teach the audience.
Consisting of my diverse, untrained thoughts and feelings.
Consisting of my diverse, untrained thoughts and feelings.
So that I may be an ideal example.
So that I may be an ideal example.
And thereby be of real service.
And thereby be of real service.
To my fellow human beings.
To my fellow human beings.
I will help others to the best of my ability.
I will help others to the best of my ability.
Every day.
Every day.
Materially.
Mentally. Mentally.
And spiritually.
And spiritually.
I will endeavor to live by the following.
I will endeavor to live by the following.
Moral and spiritual rules.
Moral and spiritual rules.
I will not judge others.
I will not judge others.
Only myself.
Only myself.
I will strictly refuse to hear or read.
I will strictly refuse to hear or read.
Unkind discussions of others.
Unkind discussions of others.
I will try to be efficient in everything.
I will try to be efficient in everything.
Neither passively depending on God.
Neither passively depending on God.
Nor egotistically claiming the credit.
Nor egotistically claiming the credit.
For myself when
for
I
myself.
When I accomplish anything.
When I accomplish anything.
I will make myself successful.
I will make myself successful.
Through my own efforts.
Through my own efforts.
And the power of God in me.
And the power of God in me.
I will love all temples and churches.
I will love all temples and churches.
As my Father's home.
As my Father's home.
But I will be loyal to these teachings.
But I will be loyal to these teachings.
I will try to support.
I will try to support.
In whatever way I can.
In whatever way I can.
My local center.
My local center.
Okay, Master, you heard him. So, you know, there's a dual meaning to that last line, supporting your local center. This is your local center. not outside. So let's talk now about what other guidance did Master give us for accelerating our spiritual growth when we're talking about intensity and concentration and focus. Well, first, of course, we have to talk about the path of Kriya Yoga. And this encompasses all of the techniques he gave us, but I want to focus just on two of them. But first, you know, when we talk about intensity in meditation, Master said the key to success of meditation is intensity of effort and duration of effort, those two combined. But sometimes we can become too intense. And if you recall in the New Path, Swami tells the story of when he was a young monk and he was meditating and trying so hard and he just didn't feel like he was making the progress he wanted. And he said to Master, "Aren't I trying hard enough?" And Master said, "You're trying too hard. It's creating tension." And so we need to understand, just as we were saying what Master brought, we need to approach our meditation period, our meditation techniques, with that same kind of joy, enthusiasm, fun, love, creativity. It should be your time for yourself, not I have to bear down and do this because I said I would. And try to make your meditation space, as you have all pledged to do to create one, make it beautiful, change it. Make it a space that you want to go into, not many of us have had lives. You go to Italy and you go into the old monasteries and there's the little stone cells with no windows, and we've had that life already. And I remember once we were on a pilgrimage to Assisi with a group of Americans. It wasn't the most recent one, so it wasn't any of you that did this. But we went into the cell at the Basilica of St. Francis of St. Joseph of Cupertino, a great saint, and I won't go into his life. But there was a little bench where he would sit, and it was so cold, and it was felt like a little prison cell. But he found God there. He was in bliss. It didn't matter. But so we brought this group of Americans there, and one of them didn't know, and they didn't have it corded off, and she sat down on the 800-year-old bench where he had sat and broke it. And we kind of put it together and quickly laughed. I thought, you know, it's dangerous to bring unschooled people to these places. But in any case, make your meditation place a place of beauty, a place of love, of joy, that reflects your heart's yearning for God. And then when you do the techniques, do them with a sense of joy. It's a beautiful dance, because there has to be the intensity, there has to be the discipline, there has to be the regularity and the routine of it. But nevertheless, don't lose the initial enthusiasm which got you on the path. That moment where you said, "I read Autobiography of a Yogi and it's what I've been longing for my whole life." And so be sure that you bring that into your meditation. Now, this year, 2016, if you do the math, is the 100th anniversary of Master introducing the energization exercises. 1916 at his school in Ranchi, he developed it to teach the boys there. And as you recall, he said, "The energization exercises are my unique contribution to the science of yoga." But I want to highlight, remember I said we're going to focus on two techniques, the energization and Kriya, because really those two, much more than we generally think of, are aspects of the same kind of experience. Because as you know, with the energization, It's tense with will, relax and feel. And Master said, it is both of those are equally important for our spiritual progress. We have to tense with will. We have to have discipline. We have to apply ourselves. But just as we're taught in the Kriya Yoga initiation, some of you don't have Kriya, I'm not giving the technique, but after you practice the technique, then, and we don't often give this period of Kriya enough focus, then you relax. Then you feel the flow of energy. You let that energy in the spine and coming up to the higher centers, you let it fill your whole consciousness. So the energization exercises give us that experience of that flow of energy, first summoning up, controlling the outward energy, but then relaxing and feeling. And Master said the relaxing and feeling, the control of outward energy and the interiorization and relaxing and feeling is the secret to spiritual progress. As simple as that. And so when you do your energization, don't just think, we'll get through these and then we'll get to our spiritual practices. They are the first part of your sadhana, without any question. And when we learn to control the outward flow of energy and interiorize it and then become aware of that inner energy, that's when we begin to have states of deep spiritual experiences. Now, Master also said that learning to control the outward energy, tense with will, is also how we work out our karma in two ways. One, on an outward level, because we are becoming aware of energy patterns in our own life. So let's say, for example, we have the tendency to be greedy financially or materially. And so this is a karmic pattern from past lives where we've kept to ourselves. We've not shared with others. You become aware through meditation, even the energization, you become aware of the patterns, karmic patterns in your own life. Become aware of the outward energy of your karma. And then by control of your consciousness, you say, I don't want to be that way anymore. I will share, maybe overshare, whatever I have to balance out that karma. So that's the first way that the learning to control energy helps us to grow spiritually, by working out our karma. You see the point I'm making? By being aware of the outward flow of energy, you become more aware of your behavior patterns. That's the link there. And by becoming more aware of your behavior patterns, which are determined by your karma, then you can begin, if you want, to change them. No one makes you change them. We can be greedy in as many lifetimes as we want. But then eventually we begin to interiorize and say, am I happy when I'm greedy? Does it make me feel good when I have something and I see others don't? And if you can answer that question, no, I don't find happiness, then we begin to work with the inward flow of energy, with the consciousness, the seeds of consciousness that creates that greed, or whatever it might be. I'm using that obviously just as an example. But then also the practice of Kriya, and this is where some of us who have been doing it for many years get sidetracked. We think, but I don't feel the flow of energy. Am I doing it wrong? Am I not, maybe I should, I heard someone say, well, say I'm not that really that into Kriya. I haven't gotten that much out of it. Well, that is a tragedy, because everyone is getting something out of it, whether you can clearly feel it or not. You know, it's sort of a, I don't know, cutesy phrase, but fake it till you make it. You know, so keep doing it, knowing with faith in the guru that the flow of energy in the spine is changing your consciousness, is loosening the vrittis of karma that are in the spine. Master said, Most people's spines are spiritually paralyzed. Not physically, but spiritually, meaning there is no flow of energy. And that's where we all start. I mean, it's not like, oh yeah, those poor people. We were there. Maybe we still are there, but at least we see a way out. And so by the practice of Kriya Yoga, think of it like a stream or a little rivulet that for a long, long time has been untended. And there are many leaves and sticks and debris in it. What I was starting to say, I remember in the early years at Ananda, for the first 5 or 6 years, I had the wonderful blessing of working in our garden, joined by many of the great souls that you know, Anant Maria, Anandi, Shivani, Jaya, Sadhana Devi, and so forth. And we all worked in the garden, and it was a great blessing. But we would have these little irrigation ditches that we would dig by hand along the row of plants. And then over, if we didn't tend them carefully, they would become all cluttered with debris. And then we'd turn on the water from the little reservoir at a hose, and that water was supposed to flow down that little stream. But it couldn't because it was all blocked. So it would go off to the side or flood a field where it wasn't supposed to go. And that's what happens with most of us when we start Kriya. The energy, because there's so many blocks of karmic unawareness and invested past patterns of consciousness, that the stream of energy can't flow in that channel. And so what did we do in the garden? Did we say, okay, these plants die, no way to get the water to them? No, we cleared out the channel. And that then the water would flow easily and the plants would get the water they needed. Well, so it is with the practice of Kriya. If we just say, you know, I'm not sure anything's happening here. I think I'll go visit another ashram or whatever. You know, I want to just say this. That years ago, there was a person who lived here for a while. This is a cautionary tale, okay? Years ago, there was a person who lived here, a very nice man. And after a while, he just started not being so involved. And then after a while, he left. It wasn't negative, he just left. And Swami, we told Swami this person was leaving. And he said, oh yes, you stop putting out energy, you lose your inspiration. You lose your inspiration, you think you'll find it somewhere else, and then you leave the path. Cautionary tale, stop putting out energy, and then the chips fall, the dominoes fall. And so we need to understand that even though it may not seem like anything's happening with our practice of Kriya, that energy is cleaning out the vrittis. And so just keep at it, intensity of effort and duration of effort. That's what brings spiritual progress. And so with our techniques, just to remember this, and remember to make it the focus of your life each day. Don't build your life around when am I going to eat and when am I going to go to work. Build your life around your periods of meditation, and then let the other pieces fill in around it. You know, Master said, I didn't come for the old nags, I came for the racehorses. And we can choose. We can be an old nag or we can be a racehorse. And it doesn't matter age, it doesn't matter how long you've been on the path, none of that matters. Master said, Christ said, and Master quoted, the last shall be first. And I always love Swami's statement, when Master said, who is the closest to the Guru? It could be a name on the mailing list. It doesn't matter what it looks like on the outside, but it's the intensity of effort, duration of effort, and bringing the joy and creativity into our meditation. This is what brings success. Now, Master also brought, so the path of Kriya Yoga, he also brought the path of devotion. And when we look at his life and read Autobiography of a Yogi, the ardency of his love for God can't help but ignite even just a little spark of that quality within us. And Swami said that when they were with Master, when Swami was a young monk, the thing that Master praised the most was their love for God, not what they did or how much they accomplished or how hard they worked. And I want to just read to you this beautiful little quote from Swami. This is from a letter that he wrote to his fellow monastics while he was still in SRF, written in 1957, and it's called A Letter to Fellow Disciples. It's in a very old book of Swami's, which we hope will be coming out electronically, called Letters to Truth Seekers. But this is what Swamiji wrote. Our guru seldom praised me for my labor, but he did sometimes praise me for my devotion, for he was more anxious that I and all of us work to develop and perfect ourselves in this heavenly quality than we do tremendous outward labor, but in forgetfulness of God. Once, owing to some physical difficulty that I was experiencing, Master freed me for a time from most of my work. He told me to spend 2 days a week resting in Encinitas and generally to take it easy. I spent all my free time in thinking of God. After some weeks of this practice, I saw Master, and much to my surprise, he said, "You are doing wonderfully." Now, curiously, perhaps, my ill health at that time was due to a great extent to the fact that I had been working so hard, yet he hadn't thought to praise me during that long period of productive work. It was only now, when I was doing nothing, that he praised me for what I was doing. Why now? Because the chief purpose of his mission was to teach us and all men an inner divine productivity. So I just wanted to share that because it brings Swami so close, and just to understand that what we do is of much lesser importance. Intensity of effort and willpower in meditation, but intensity of yearning for God. If you find yourself in a state of indifference or forgetfulness or rebellion, all of these things happen, just try, do whatever you can, chant, listen to Master's voice, read his writings, visualize him, walk with him, whatever you can to reawaken the fervor of your heart, because that's the fire that's the fuel, I should say, that fires our whole spiritual search, the ardency of our love. And in this age of Dwapara Yuga, it is more important because people, the value that we develop this quality, and Master knew it. And that's why he came in that form of a lover of God, because we need that depth of love and devotion to counter the energy that's breaking apart the fabric of society and of religion and of so many social forms that we see around us today. So to go deep in our love for God. And as Sri Yukteswar said in The Holy Science, one cannot take one step forward on the spiritual path without the love of God. So we all have it, but maybe we think it's not so important. Maybe we think it's childish. Maybe we think people will laugh at us. You know, I'll share a story that we heard recently. Maybe we should open these windows. It's really warm in here. Some of you heard us talk about the work that's going on that Ananda is doing in India in Vrindavan, helping the widows. And the woman, one of the key figures, is a woman named Shama. Simple young woman, doesn't speak English, quite radiant, always wears a white sari. She was born in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a place where many abandoned widows, thousands of abandoned widows throughout India come and beg and live off as they can. Well, Ananda, through the Paramahansa Yogananda Charitable Trust, has started for residential homes for widows and work opportunities and health opportunities and so forth. It's a very beautiful work. But this woman, Shama, we met her. As I say, she's very simple, doesn't speak English, since she was 17 years old, without any pay, has been on her own going and helping these widows. And then we just recently learned more about her. Since her family told one of the leaders of this Paramahansa Yogananda Charitable Trust, since she was a little girl, she would go into ecstasy singing to Krishna. And she would go up on the roof of their house and she would just dance, totally oblivious if she would fall off the roof or what. And so the family members had to every night sleep around on the roof to watch her so she wouldn't fall off. And finally, they were getting a bit tired of this, so they locked her in her room. But her mother and father told us she would just touch the lock and it would unlock and she would go up on the roof and dance in ecstasy. Well, what's wrong with us? Why can't we do that? What's holding us back? And the more we can yearn for that kind of love for God, the more we will make spiritual progress, because that's the key. God watches the heart. You can say, look, I've done a million kriyas. Aren't you impressed? And God will look the other way. But you can just look at him with absolute, total committed love in your heart, giving everything you have. And that's the point. Whatever we hold for ourselves, then we don't give to God. There's the beautiful poem based on a story written by Rabindranath Tagore of the beggar in the streets. And he's going about his daily begging. And then he sees coming into the village the royal chariot and the king. And he thought, oh, my fortune is made. My fortune is made. And he runs up to the king. And the king says, he doesn't give him a purse of gold. He doesn't give him riches. The king says to him, what do you give me? And the beggar is shocked. What is this, the king begging from the beggar? And the man, sort of not knowing what to do, reaches in his little pouch and he finds one little grain of rice and he gives it to the king and walks away totally baffled. And then at the end of the day, after he's continued begging, he dumps the little contents of the bag on the floor of his hut and there he sees one little grain of rice turned to gold. And he said, if only I had had the courage to give him everything. And so that beautiful poem illustrates the gold of our love. When we give it all, we are transformed. When we hold back and say, not yet, I have things to do, I don't know how to do this, what if it doesn't work? All of those self-justifications and rationalizations, we get nothing. But when we can say, I'm tired of keeping for myself, I want to give God every ounce of love that I have, total immersion, total surrender, then we start to walk the path that brings us to God realization. And then finally, Master brought the path of practicality in daily life. And he gave us right attitudes. And I'll just touch on a few because I don't want to run out of time here. But maybe the most important one is to be positive in all circumstances. And you know, we hear so much about this, but there was a sentence by Master that put it in such a profound clarity for me. He said, when we allow negativity to take over our consciousness, we estrange ourselves from the bliss of God. On the other hand, when we choose to be positive, we are more receptive to that bliss. And that is the point. It's not, oh, I want to be good and nice and be a good Boy Scout and all that. It's positive and negativity open doors. Negativity closes the door that leads to bliss. Positive thinking opens the door that leads to bliss. And bliss is realizing God's presence. And Master would take his disciples and he would try to help them build a bridge between daily life and meditation. And just as his guru in that wonderful chapter in Experiencing Cosmic Consciousness, we played Samadhi yesterday, but after that experience, we all know the end of the story. What did Sri Yukteswar do? Here's a broom. Go sweep the porch. That's what Master would do with his disciples. Those at Mount Washington, he would meditate with them every morning, and then they would get up for meditation. They would each get a broom, and they would sweep the walkways. Why? Because he was trying to build a bridge between the experience, the interior, joyful, calm, centered state of meditation, and outward work. And I think we all should look at our own lives and see how we can do this. Don't just leap up for meditation, but do something in which you still feel God's presence, just as Master did with his disciples. Then if you can do that, then you could do something more complicated, more demanding, more challenging to your thoughts. But always in the back of your mind, there's the awareness of God's presence. So practicality in daily life. He didn't come. In fact, someone said to him once about his path was a mystical path. He said, oh no, this isn't a mystical path. It's a very practical path. But it's both. It's practical because it shows us how to walk through our daily life with the presence of God, with the joy, the peace, the calmness, the harmony of God. And so Master gave us many things to help accelerate our spiritual growth. But the greatest of all is the presence, his constant guidance, presence in our lives. Attunement is everything. Attunement to the Guru. Go deep. There's one thing that you do in your life. Give it all to Master and feel, know him as deeply as you are capable of knowing anything. Nothing else in life has value. As our theme for the week, reiterating it, the great saint of India, Sukhdeva, said, all time is wasted that is not spent seeking God. And we can adapt that and say, all time is wasted that is not spent inwardly in the presence of your Guru.
I'll just continue on exactly that same theme. Master gave a huge variety of different kinds of talks, proper diet, how to be successful, how to draw your ideal mate, how to cook, how to everything. But in the presence of the disciples, those who had given their lives more deeply, he did not talk very much. In fact, he was sometimes completely silent. There's a story that I read from, it was from Durga Mata, who Master would sometimes go in order to get away from the intensity of things. He would like to go various places around, either in the desert, or in this case, it was that he went to near Los Angeles, out toward Palm Springs. There is a place called Palm Canyon. It's now part of an Indian reservation. And it's a beautiful stream that has about a half a mile or three quarters of a mile of palms that grow along it. And it's one of those magical places that you can go in Northern California. Sometimes people like to go into the redwoods because there's a particular kind of energy. There's a particular light that filters down and a feeling. Well, this ancient Palm Canyon has that same kind of feeling. And Master would go there and they would camp, but Master wouldn't allow anyone to talk. In fact, it's at that place that he wrote that beautiful chant, "Come out of the silent sky." It's a beautiful, lovely chant, but he wouldn't allow anyone to talk. They said he would bathe in the little stream and he would wash his hair, sit on a rock and meditate for long periods of time. So those around him, he was teaching more through vibration and example than he was just through words or techniques or outer things. So to the larger public, he basically gave techniques of how to be more successful or happier in this world. To the disciples, he said, "This world is delusion. Our job is to get out of it." Not, as Swami would put it sometimes, God is not here to clean up our mud puddle. He's here to get us out of the mud puddle. And so Master would try to draw his disciples out, and vibrationally. So to the close disciples, his primary teaching was exactly what Devi was talking about, attunement, tuning in to the consciousness of the Guru. Now, when we do that, we get everything else. We get techniques, we get devotion, we get magnetism, we get all of the right attitudes, and if we want them, we find out how to be successful and how to draw the proper mate and all of those things too. But it all comes through deeper and deeper attunement to the consciousness of the Guru. So attunement is absolutely at the top of what we should be doing with our time. I'll talk about that a little more. But I want to give a kind of a hierarchy here of the things that will accelerate our spiritual growth, since that's what the theme of today is. So the greatest accelerator of all is attunement. The next one is devotion, as Devi was talking about. Devotion opens up the flow of our heart's energy and turns it toward the desire to merge with God. That's what devotion is. Emotion is that heart's energy going out to things of the world, and devotion is that same heart's energy but going up toward the spiritual eye, or going up toward unity with God. Or, as I one time said, emotion is an Italian opera. Devotion is an Italian saint. And so that's the difference. That all of those things in the world that we give our energy, give our love to, give our energy to, want, desire, spend money and time and effort to achieve, that all takes us out into the world. It's not that it's bad. It's just that it's a time waster. And I'm talking about real time here. Incarnations and incarnations and incarnations of wasting time. And why is it wasting time? Because it won't fulfill us. It won't make us happy. That's all. If it would make us happy, all of these saints would be coming with techniques about how to get rich and how to, you know, all of that. And they'd say, forget meditation, forget seeking God, forget all of that. This is the solution. This is how you can be happy. But it isn't. They know that, and in our own souls, we know that. So first is attunement, then it's devotion, awakening that. And then after that comes techniques, because the techniques, especially Kriya Yoga and especially meditation, calm and bring the mind inward. As Master said, meditation helps clear away the fog of delusion. or the fog of confusion. So meditation is necessary to clear that away, because without that, without meditation, without a certain amount of stillness, and as Devi explained, that meditation, especially Kriya Yoga, but any meditation, burns up the seeds of karma that are paralyzing our spine spiritually and frees up the inner spine so that the energies can flow. All meditation will help do that. And it's only with that flow that we can begin to get anywhere. So attunement, devotion, practice of the techniques, especially that the guru gives, and then finally service. So those four, and basically in that order, are the things that will accelerate our growth. Now, service is important, because if our energy is turned toward ourselves, it enhances and solidifies the ego. When it's turned toward others, it expands, and it's like the ego loosens up. Just think of it like, I don't know, like water droplets in the air are easy to disperse, but when they get congregated or compressed into water, it's harder to disperse, and when that water freezes, it's basically impossible. And so service expands us. Service allows those energies to flow properly so that they aren't concentrated on freezing the ego into a harder and harder block of ice that's very hard to get rid of. So, once again, attunement, devotion, practice of the techniques, especially meditation and service. Those are the accelerants. Now, let me talk about each of those a little bit. Attunement with the guru. Now, partly, attunement really comes from being in the presence of the guru. Now, it does not have to be a physical presence. But in our meditation, we should feel that we're in the presence and that we're receiving the energy from, for most of us, Master is our guru, that we're receiving the energy. Swami told us to visualize Master's eyes or look at a picture of Master and try to draw the consciousness from his eyes, because the eyes are the windows of the soul. So to try to draw the consciousness. So inwardly is the most important part of the attunement. So look at a picture of Master. Then close your eyes and visualize Master inside. Now, does that work? Yes. Master said, if you can do that clearly enough and hold it long enough, the saint will appear to you. He will manifest himself. And so that's the power of that attunement. We can draw out of the ether, out of the astral world, we can draw the presence. And whether we draw it out in a physical form is much less important than that we draw it into our own consciousness. Because attuning our consciousness with the consciousness of the guru, who knows who he is, knows God, helps us build the bridge to know God. So inwardly is the most important. But then there are also things outwardly that we can do. Another thing that is very, very helpful is to listen to Master's voice. There are many recordings now available. I remember Devi and I were present with Swami one evening, probably, I don't know, it must have been 30 years ago, in 83, no, it was earlier, yeah, 83 or 84. And we had gone to the home of this wonderful devotee of Master, who was the leader for a long time of the SRF meditation group in Rome. Her name was Renata Arlini. She was a wonderful person. But she had access to things that we didn't have access to. She was very good friends with the wife of Dr. Lewis. And so they were buddies. And among other things that she got from the wife of Dr. Lewis, Mildred, or as sometimes Master would say, Mildred, because she had this fiery temper. And one time Master was riding with her in a car, and he rolled down the window, and she rolled it up. And he reached over and he rolled it down again, and she rolled it up. And he reached over and he rolled it down again and looked at her, and finally she gave in and didn't roll it back up again. But anyway, Renata was a good friend of hers. And Renata loved to collect things. There are many stories, but I'm only going to tell this one. So at the end of dinner, she gave us a little cassette tape. Now, the only thing that we had ever heard of Master's voice up until this time, the only thing that had been released was that, "This is Paramahansa Yogananda, and I am praying. Pray with me." And that was the only image we had of Master's voice. And it was, you know, this little short clip. So we went back to the room that we were staying in, nearby hotel. We walked back and played the cassette tape, and it was a lecture of Master. And for the first time, we heard his normal voice of the way that he lectured. And Swami was just weeping, because naturally he had it in his memory. But for the first time since the time of Master, he heard the natural speaking voice that he had heard so many times. And so tuning in to the voice of Master has a great, great deal of power and will help attune you. So get those recordings and play them, listen to them. Play them while you're traveling. Play the next thing is to play or read Master's books. One of the beautiful things that Devi and I love to do when we're traveling, because Swami reading the words of Master have great power because there's more depth of attunement. So we listen to Swami reading the autobiography, and we can drive from here to LA and barely notice that we're in the car by listening to that. Now, you can choose to do that or to listen to Rush Limbaugh. Which is going to provide the greater attunement? You choose. So listen, read Master's works, but don't just read. Now, we can read and it's passive. And it's enjoyable, and it passes the time, and we get a little bit out of it. But if we read with intelligence and with concentration and intensity, so at the minister's retreat on Saturday, we recommended that for this period of time, that each of the ministers read one chapter each day of the autobiography of a yogi. And I'd like to extend that invitation to all of you. I won't make you stand up and take a pledge. But
I will.
Okay. But read a chapter each day of Master's autobiography. But here's what I would like to recommend. Don't just read it passively and kind of think, you know, with diverse attention. Read it. And then read back through it and take notes, because every chapter will have techniques or attitudes or messages that will help improve your life. And so reread and take notes. And then from those notes, you can get a bunch of notes. I'm going to read you some notes that I took last night from two different books. You can get a bunch of notes. But then pick out from those notes one or two things that you will actually commit to doing in your life. If you can do that, it will change the patterns. That's what real attunement is. Not just to passively be around, but to absorb and allow the guru to change your habit patterns. Master used a very interesting image. He said, we're all puppets, and the strings are our desires and our habits and our past karma. And the puppeteer is, which is our old karma, is pulling all those strings and making us act in a certain way. He said, if you want to be free, you've got to cut those strings. The way we cut the strings of mental thought or habitual behaviors is we have to change them a little bit at a time. And so pick one or two of these things that you will actually do. Now I'm going to read the notes that I took. I did two quick things because I was preparing last night. These are techniques from Whispers from Eternity, just the beginning. Every one of those prayers is a teaching. You could go into each of those prayers and get a whole technique teaching out of it. But this is the from the introduction. We know that those things are potentially life-changing. So these are the notes that I took. Pray, demanding, and knowing that you are God's child. Now that alone, if you could actually do that, incorporate that, it would change your whole life. So when you pray, pray knowing that you're God's child. He isn't distant from you. He isn't withholding anything from you. He wants what you want for your own benefit. And if you can really understand that and pray that way, then your prayers will begin to come into fruition. I'm going to just read these because if I talk about everyone, we'll be here until tomorrow. Avoid both pride and passivity. That prayer he had, I will reason, I will, I will act, but guide thou my reason, will, and activity to the right path in everything. So the combination between we have to do it, but we have to do it under the guidance of God. We have to do this, but attunement with the guru, we have to lead our life. But attunement with the guru will allow us to lead that life in the proper way that will have this life leading us toward God. Take a single demand, mentally picture the imagery, and meditate deeply on what is preserved or perceived. So you take a demand, you repeat it over and over, driving it into both the subconscious, and with intensity, you drive it into the superconscious mind. And then you sit quietly and perceive what is behind that. Be wholly focused. Intensity is first and repetition is second. Repeat until you have spiritualized the demand. And then he says, don't pull it up like a plant that you've planted. Don't pull it up every 2 days or every 2 hours and say, has it grown yet? So do it and know, have faith that what you have prayed for is going to manifest, is going to be achieved. So here's my suggestion with studying Master's work, is that you read first, then you go through and you make these notes, and then you would go through your notes and you would say, what of that am I absolutely committed to being able to do, that I will promise to do, and do that one or two things. Now, there's a master formula for all of Master's teachings and Master's techniques. This is like the master key that opens all the doors. And this is quite serious. So there is a formula that will give you success on all levels. It's four things. It is, first of all, you must have will. Master said will is energy plus desire, energy plus energy directed toward a desire. So you have
energy plus desire directed toward a goal.
Toward a goal. Energy, well, the desire plus energy directed toward a goal. That's what it is. The goal is what you want. In this case, let's say we want attunement with Master. Then you have to have that desire. The flow of energy toward that, directed toward that goal, that's willpower. You know, I'm going to have to excuse myself. I have to use the bathroom. So
okay.
You talk for a little bit.
You have to give us 2, 3, and 4.
No, I'll just, you know what I'm going to do? I didn't cover a lot of what I was going to say. So. You know, something that Master talked about very much was self-analysis. And recently I was talking with a friend, and she shared with me a concept that I thought was brilliant and helpful, and she said it transformed her life. It sounds a little intellectual at first, but when you're looking at your daily life, then her concept was unacknowledged resistances. So it's not like, now why am I not wanting to go to meditation? Well, I have lots of good reasons, but what's the unacknowledged resistance there? And when we start pulling up those resistances that we haven't really looked at, that's what self-analysis is. And then we can start to make changes. Because then we can start to really see, oh my gosh. And then she said, I took it even deeper. And I said, where does the resistance come from? And it comes from fear. I'm afraid if I give in to that, something bad is going to happen. And so when you start pushing through the fear, this friend had some difficulty with her family. And she was trying to, oh no, we can't let this happen, we can't let this happen. And then finally she just said, what if it all happens? I'm going to stop resisting. And if her children came to her and told her some terrible thing had happened, she just said, okay, let's deal with that. And she said, it totally transformed my life as a devotee, my family life, my children, everything. And so it's a very useful tool. Unacknowledged resistances. Now, if you notice, I didn't have any resistance when Joe did it, so he had to go, and now he's going to finish his talk.
And I overcame my resistance to leaving the stage, which could have been embarrassing, but actually wasn't. Okay, so now I want to come back to this formula, and I'll start a little bit again. And I'll just give the whole formula, because this is really the master key for everything. Will plus concentration plus intensity plus duration equals success. Those of you who are taking notes, write it down. Will plus concentration, plus intensity, plus duration equals success. And that's true for everything that you're going to attempt to do. It's certainly true for the spiritual path. So now let me go through each of those parts. Will, as we have determined, is desire plus energy directed at a goal. That's why. So desire is that you want to do something, you want to tense your hand, you have to send the energy there, And that flow of energy is will. Now, the stronger that flow of energy is, the greater the will, the greater the magnetism, the greater the desire, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. So that flow of energy creates the magnetism that will draw to you whatever you need. And in fact, in this case, that will, that desire, that's why devotion is so strong, because that's the desire for God, creates the magnetism that will draw to you the grace of God in the guru, in the techniques, in the understanding, and everything else. So first is that will, and the stronger it is, the greater that flow of energy. Secondly is that you have to concentrate that flow. Now, concentration and intensity are slightly different, but concentration is to bring everything to a focus. So we know in our meditation that what we're trying to do is concentrate deeply. In fact, Master defined meditation by deep concentration directed toward God or an aspect of God, such as joy or light or sound or any of the things we meditate on. So that deep concentration, you know, well, I'll come back and I'll use the example now. If you have a flashlight, we have got a nice little flashlight, and it's got one of those little packs that has the three mini batteries, the AAA batteries, you know. And it's a very good flashlight for walking around. It's got this little zoom lens on it, so you can spread the beam, or you can concentrate the beam. And the more you concentrate, the brighter it becomes. But that is inherently got a certain kind of limitation to it. Those same three batteries directed through a laser can send a beam to the moon that, if you had a powerful enough telescope, you could actually see that laser beam on the moon. That's because a laser concentrates the wavelengths of the light that is going. So a flashlight has even when you try to concentrate it, the different wavelengths disperse. A laser gets all of those wavelengths the same and in the same phase, and it has enormous power. So those same three batteries can blind a person, could send a beam to the moon and back. So when we concentrate the energy, when we concentrate the flow that is produced by the will, then it has real potential. But three batteries doesn't produce a very strong flow, three little AAA batteries. The next is intensity. So intensity is the strength of that flow. And so you want to have very strong energy with your concentration focused on something. And when you can focus very strongly and hold it there, concentrate plus that flow, be strong, then it has enormous power. There's a very interesting book that I read, fun book. It's called The Emerald Mile, and it's about a trip of rafters down the Colorado River, which is what goes through the Grand Canyon. And they set the record during a flood year of a flood time of how fast they could go down the Colorado River. But the story that I want to tell from that is there was this enormous, the last time it'll probably ever happen because now we've drained it too much, but at the head of the canyon is a huge reservoir called Lake Mead. Enormous amount of water in that huge lake. Now it's drained, but at this time, the conditions were just right that winter for enormous rain, enormous snowfall, and then a quick melting of that, so that Lake Mead not only filled up, it was in danger of overflowing Hoover Dam, which is at the top of it, which creates that lake. So they had to release the water, and they released the water through two enormous tunnels. Think of a tunnel 30 or 40 feet around that go into the rock where the dam is built, inside the rock and out around, so that it's got a real barrier. And so they release the water through that. Here I'm going to talk about the need for concentration and relaxation, and this is a story to illustrate that. As they began releasing water, after a day or two, they started noticing this big rumbling noise, and they didn't know what was happening. And so they had to shut off the release, and they went inside one of these tunnels, and they found something called cavitation. So inside this enormous tunnel, there was one little bolt that was sticking out. Little bolt like that in a 30-foot tunnel. But the water, because there was so much flow, think of that flow being like the willpower, and the water was concentrated, the whole lake, we had now concentrated that flow into that tunnel, and now the intensity of that water was so strong that when it hit that bolt, it started a little vibration, and about 3 feet down, that vibration collected, and it created a little pothole. And that created another vibration, and another 2 feet down, it created a bigger pothole, until when they examined it, that cavitation was almost ready to erode the whole mountainside. And so see how much intensity. Now, that says that if you're going to have real intensity, you have to relax. You don't want those little bolts creating cavitation in your spine. So relaxation and allowing that energy to flow will create an enormous power. And then if you can hold that power for a length of time, that will give you the power to raise your consciousness into the state of God union. But we can't get there. There's no way around it. We cannot get there by passive, dispersed, non-intense, little quick things. You can't go and hope that you can have God realization by somebody else doing the work for you, or by not applying your own deep will that is directed through attunement and devotion and techniques and relaxation and service to others. So that formula, will plus concentration plus intensity plus duration, will give you the success that you're seeking in your spiritual life and in all other aspects of